more of what Chavez is saying, particularly when he's speaking about women's work. And we do have copies of that film and the other films we've made in Venezuela for sale if people want to buy them. That's how we fund our organizing. Just on the race, I mean, the whole problem in Venezuela was that it was always hidden. You know, the fact that people are black and indigenous, and the white elite completely, you know, took the profits from the oil and the other industries and so on, and they were the only ones to benefit. And there was a whole thing about everybody is, you know, either white or mixed race, and they used to use this mixed race thing when in fact, you know, there wasn't any acknowledgement of the fact that people are descended from African slaves and from the indigenous people, and with the revolution that is changing and people are acknowledging that. I just thought that I would say a few things about what we experienced when we were in Venezuela, and then maybe people can ask any questions or make any comments that they have. On the social forum, we didn't really go for the social forum. We're not really that bothered about it. We don't really agree with that whole slogan, another world is possible, because in fact Chavez doesn't agree either. It says it's not just possible, it's necessary for our survival. Really we went for what we were doing in the second and third weeks, which we went to live in the barrios with the grassroots organizers that we're in touch with, from the users network of the Women's Development Bank, Ban Mujer, the state bank for women in Venezuela, and the grassroots network in a city called Los Teques. And we heard and saw firsthand, you know, how people live and how they are going about their revolutionary work in the various committees that they have set up and the missions. These are the government programs that people have demanded and that they are implementing. So, for example, we heard about their work in the land committees, and this is where the grassroots themselves in both the urban and the rural areas, they form sometimes large committees, but there might be a smaller number of people actually working full-time on them, to survey the land and work out who actually owns what, so people can have their title deeds, which people never had ownership of their land, and also to reclaim, particularly in the rural areas, unused land. And Chavez brought in a law that said that that unused land could be taken back and used by people. So these big latifundios, you know, massive estates, often absentee landlords, like there's one British landlord, Lord Vesey, who had massive estates, and a lot of his land has just been taken back, so people can go and settle on it and grow food again, you know, and survive. We also went to see soup kitchens, and they mentioned those there very briefly in the film. I mean, you know, a lot of people have a problem just with food security, and it is women who generally manage the soup kitchens, and they explained to us that it's not just about feeding the children but also feeding the adults, particularly feeding the mothers and making sure that breastfeeding mothers in particular have enough food so that they can also nourish their children. But again, they're not just centres for immediate relief, but it's about organising within the community so that people can have access through the soup kitchens to all of the other things, like the education you heard about, the healthcare and so on. The healthcare itself is just extraordinary. I mean, it is better than what we have in this country. They set up a mission called Barrio Dentro because in many of the poorest communities there just was no healthcare at all. People had no access to doctors whatsoever. And now there are free clinics in the communities which are staffed by Cuban doctors for the most part. Because the Venezuelan doctors would not do this work. They would not go into the barriers, they would not live with the communities because they wanted to make lots of money and so on. So Chavez sold oil to Cuba, and in return Cuba sent 15,000 doctors into Venezuela. And we met some of those people, and they're really extraordinary what they're doing. They practice preventive healthcare, so it's not kind of pumping drugs into people and so on, but it's getting people to do self-help, you know, to work together in groups on keeping healthy, on diet, and if they have a particular illness, all getting together and working out ways to beat it, using natural remedies, natural medicine as well. And it's just really extraordinary. And they also have even specialists in the health centres, like oncologists or gynecologists or whatever, there as well, just right in the community. They part of the health centres is that they are actually run by and held accountable by committees from the communities. So it's not that the doctors are there deciding, you know, what healthcare people are going to have. It's the community that decides, and they set up a committee which monitors the doctors and holds them accountable. So if they're, you know, there's some problem or they're not doing their job, then they are gotten rid of. And those committees also do all sorts of other work, all that caring work that has to be done, like visiting the sick and just making sure that everybody stays well. The education, you heard a little bit about the different missions. They have made the country literate in 1.5 years, you know, which really gives the lie to all that UN crap about, you know, that, oh, in 15 years we may have such a percentage of so many countries literate. You know, if the resources are diverted, it can happen. And that's what has happened in Venezuela. And they also then have high school, the high school missions, Mission Rivas, and university missions, Mission Sucre, which are all free. So the entire education is now free. Plus, you heard that, they, as it said in the film, they're providing subsidies so people can have some food and travel allowance as well. And one of the things that came out, particularly when we were there, in relation to the university education, which is, you know, for the first time people from the barrios, working class people, are getting to get this knowledge, get this information. But the professor and students who came and spoke to us said, look, the first thing that we try and do is to say to students, you know, how are you going to be accountable to your community? How are you going to use your skills to be of service to the community? You know, not the first thing, how am I going to get a degree and make lots of money? And it's just a complete shift, a complete change. And my day job, as some of you may know, is I am an academic. So this was, you know, a fantastic thing for me to hear, and an encouragement, you know, that this can happen elsewhere, that we can take this back and be inspired by it here as well. Like he was talking about, for example, lawyers. He said, if we're teaching law, we talk about how the lawyer will find the law that will help the community beat some environmental project that's going to damage the community, or some injustice that they are suffering. If the lawyer looks and finds that there is no law, the lawyer will go and protest outside the parliament until that law is implemented. You know, that basically the lawyer is accountable to the movement. And for many of us, actually many of the strike women were applauding and cheering when we heard that, because we have worked with many terrible lawyers over the years, particularly in asylum work. There's some really brutal people out there, you know, who are just ready to make a buck and let people be deported and all the rest of it. So it was really fantastic to hear that. Ban Mujer, the Women's Development Bank, you heard a little bit about. I mean, this is a bank that, if you're poor and a woman, it lends you money, you know, which normally does not happen anywhere in the world. And it's a state bank, you know, it's not being sort of run by organizations or NGOs or whatever. They say, the president of the bank, Nora Castaneda, who we work with, says, look, poverty has a woman's face everywhere in the world. You know, it's mostly women who are poor, 70% of the world's poor. So if you want to end poverty, then you have to start with women, and you have to ask women what they want and what their demands are. And they really do that, and they go into the communities and work with women in collective, not individually, but together. How can they, you know, work out a cooperative or something that they need and get the credits for it? And one woman that I stayed with, she said that they'd applied to the bank for so many credits, and the bank had given them twice the number of credits, because they'd worked out that, you know, that they had not included their own labour, or they had not included various costs, and, you know, they were ready to give them more. And they always say, the users of the bank and the women who run the bank say, it's not just a bank, it's a way to empower women. I mean, I hate that word kind of, but it is really a tool to revolutionize the Venezuelan economy, the economy in transition. We already knew a little bit about how the military worked with the communities, but we learned a bit more about it there, and we met several soldiers and saw how they were working with children and with adults. And we feel that it's another way to invest in caring, not killing, that you that the military in Venezuela is used in the service of the community. So it's used to build schools and roads and whatever the community needs. And this is all funded, you know, by the oil wealth and by the profits from other industries. And one thing I heard was that what happened when Chavez took power was that there was a fund which had been set up by the state oil company, which was a kind of emergency fund that automatically some profits were put into if the money fell out of the oil market or the economy collapsed, that there would be this fund, which was really to rescue the elite, you know, to make sure that they didn't lose out. And what Chavez did was to turn that into a social fund and to increase hugely the amount of money going into it and that it be used immediately straight away. So he is channeling money to the grassroots for their organizing. And it really, what struck us is just that it's really changing everything, including even the relationships between women and men. I mean, everything is up for grabs and changing there. Another thing that we kind of saw was people's real openness, you know, and you can see it in their faces that they just want to engage with you, they want to share their experience. They know that the struggle they're making is really important, not just for them, but for everybody else in the world. And they have no sense of, you know, oh, this is just a small thing that I've got my credit or something, that this really is, you know, revolutionary, and it's something that you need to know about, and maybe you can learn from it, and maybe we can learn from you. The other thing, as I said, was the relationship between professionals and the grassroots, that one of the things that's happening is that those grassroots people are demanding accountability from the professionals, that they don't just, you know, make their living off people and make their careers off people and so on, but that they have to be, their skills have to be at the service of people, and that has to be part of the revolution as well, otherwise it will fail. And for us, it really was a joy to see that women are really the majority in every committee, in every organization. It is women who are spearheading, grassroots women who are spearheading this revolution and benefiting from it. The other thing that you really came across when you were there, it really struck you that, you know, often the media particularly tries to say it's just one man, you know, this military man, Chavez, and, you know, he's kind of doing it all and so on. And it really isn't one man. He's really not this kind of self-made man. And it's kind of a put-down of the movement in Venezuela, really, for the media and some within the movement to say that. I mean, he's been made by the movement. And they hold him accountable. They definitely do. They say what they want, and he has to deliver it. And there's really a current within not just the sort of the media and the establishment, but even within the left, of talking about Chavismo without Chavez, kind of, you know, the revolution without Chavez. And it feels to us anyway that it's kind of like some would say, particularly the political parties, more want to take over or are jealous of that relationship that he has with the grassroots, rather than, you know, that it's anything, that any problem with him. And they certainly don't have a problem with him, grassroots people there. And he's really key to the whole process for many reasons, but just two that struck us was, one, he is brilliant at undermining U.S. intervention, you know, U.S. attacks on Venezuela. I mean, he's done all sorts of stuff to stop it, a lot of it very funny. But they really are under constant threat. You all know about the attempted coup and then the oil strike. Well, it was really a lockout where they tried to destroy the state oil industry, and then they tried a recall referendum to try and get rid of Chavez, and their continual attempts to assassinate him. So it's constant threat. And when we were there, we heard that they have just sold a load of weapons to Trinidad and Tobago, which is an island which is just off the coast of Venezuela, and they're trying to, you know, do an arms build-up in the region and try and set other governments against Chavez. So it's that constant kind of situation is facing people, and people are all the time ready to defend him. But the other thing that, you know, struck us about how crucial he is that he's really funding the grassroots organizing. I mean, he's funding the revolution. He is channeling this money to the grassroots for the services that they're providing and all the political organizing that they are doing. And it's not really, you know, sometimes you'll see the phrase the Chavez government or whatever does this and that, and it's not really like that, because a lot of the levels of the government, the bureaucracy in the government, don't actually go along with Chavez or don't go along with the revolution or don't do anything or, you know, go slow and all the rest, or try to sabotage it. So it's really him in a relationship directly with grassroots people and a few trusted people around that. So that's, you know, you can see how precarious the whole situation is. And just as an example of that process, you know, women have been demanding recognition for their work for many years in Venezuela. And while we were there, Chavez made this fantastic announcement that women, starting with 100,000 of the poorest women, were to get wages for housework, which, you know, is the first time ever in any country, anywhere, that there has been that recognition by payment for the work that women do in the home and on the land and in the community. And they're to get, I think it's $180 for a start. It's $180 a month, yeah, to start with. And then there's supposed to be an increase in that, and more women are supposed to get it. So because that has been our focus for several decades of campaigning, that was really fantastic for us. But it's also a great victory for grassroots women everywhere. And it means the recognition of women's work and of caring, and of that priority of caring over killing, you know, over destruction by environmental projects, destruction by war, by famine, or whatever. That the priority instead has to be life and the caring for life, and also the person who does the caring work. And it's really a power for all of us to demand more wherever we are, that we can use that to demand more. I think it also does give recognition to women's environmental struggles and against the multinationals and the struggles against environmental disasters, because our experience in many countries is that it's women who pick up the pieces when there's an environmental disaster, or when we say something like a pipeline, God forbid, explodes or causes pollution. It's women who have to deal with the fact that children get sick, animals get sick, whatever, in the community, have to take care of them, have to deal with the fact that there are terrible disabilities from some explosion or some pollution. And the multinationals and the governments are reliant on women doing, I mean, they calculate on women doing that work, that women will, because we love our husbands and fathers and children, and that we will just do it. And we've been in touch with a number of women's organizations, particularly women with disabilities, who have campaigned on the basis that they want to be compensated for having to do that awful, terrible work, and that they want it recognized that they had to do it. So an organization of women with disabilities in the strike network, WinVisible, works with the Bhopal women, you know, the disaster that happened in India in 1984 when Dow Chemical, the plant blew up and thousands were killed and many, many thousands more injured and, you know, still suffering terrible pollution. And it's women who are leading that struggle and absolutely demanding the compensation. And, you know, recently they marched all the way to Delhi, I think, you know, were beaten by the police in the streets and so on, but they will not give up and want it recognized that they have had to do all this work and that they are should be the first to get the compensation from Dow. Because it's so important that this is implemented properly, this wages for housework that has been promised, a part of our network in Venezuela issued a statement welcoming it, but also talking about the terrible corruption that there is. I mean, just because you start the revolutionary process doesn't mean, you know, then it's all fine overnight. How to deal with this terrible corruption, and also the fact that their work for the revolution should also be paid. And they were proposing that women in the grassroots networks directly, particularly in the networks of the bank, the Women's Bank, should be the ones to do the census as to who gets the money first, because they're the ones who really will know who is the poorest and who needs it. And in fact, on the 8th of March, International Women's Day, Chavez met with them and announced that that is what would happen. So, you know, he has been accountable and has listened to them. What the strike has been doing, what we've tried to do is, of course, to publicize the victories for everyone in the Venezuelan Revolution with the films and various books and so on, but also to use those victories in our struggles where we are. So, for example, women in the strike in the US were organizing to support people who were devastated by Hurricane Katrina and just absolutely lost everything. And President Chavez offered cheap oil, heating oil, to poor people in the US, that Venezuela would give this, would sell them at a low rate, you know, not a high cost, this heating oil. So the strike was able to work with Chavez and the revolution to get some of the heating oil to Katrina survivors. So it really did go to, you know, people who needed it the most. And along the way, we had to battle various NGOs and, you know, these various bigger corrupt funded organizations who, you know, were going to take the money, but it would end up in whoever's pocket. In Ireland, we took an article of the Constitution which recognises and values women's work for the first time, the housework, the unwaged work, Article 88. And we said, why can't we have this in the Irish Constitution? You know, there is an article in the Irish Constitution about woman's life within the home. And, you know, obviously it's fairly bad, it's fairly sexist. But it's a recognition, you know, it's something that's in there, some recognition that women have done this work over the years. So we wanted to keep that article in there because some other organizations were arguing to just completely get rid of it because they said it discriminated against women with careers. Sorry, but women still do housework, and an awful lot of women in Ireland are still housewives. And we were able to use Article 88 and push it as a model, and as a result of that article has stayed in the Irish Constitution, and they've made some